Mr. O'Donnell.
Chair, thank you. I represent the Verisona Law Survivors RSA207 and RS189 in this case study. Both of them attended Stanbridge Earls School as boarders. Neither have given life evidence in this case study, so I propose to use this short closing to remind the panel of their experiences at Stanbridge Earls and then address you on what should be done to prevent those sorts of events again in the future. RSA 207 was sent to board at Stanbridge Earls in September 2009 when she was 11 years of age. She was physically and sexually assaulted by other pupils from the moment she started there. She called her mother repeatedly to inform her that she was unhappy. Her mother contacted the school but was told that what was described as the bullying would settle down. In fact, it continued until 2012. When her mother emailed the school to complain about the fact that nothing was being done to stop her daughter being abused by other pupils, she was told that such conduct was part of children's normal behaviour at the age. A207 is described in her statement that she was physically and sexually assaulted as a matter of routine at Stanbridge Earls. Boys would grab her breasts during lessons. She'd be rugby tackled and then punched when she was on the ground. During her second year at Stanbridge Earls, she was forced by a group of older boys to expose her genitals and breasts when she was at the school and remain exposed for 2 minutes. Now, that incident was raised by the then head teacher in a school assembly the following year. In front of the whole school, the head humiliated A207 by naming her as the girl who'd exposed herself. The school then dismissed that incident as a game of truth or dare. Now, quite understandably, A207's mother made a formal complaint about Stanbridge Earls to Ofsted, ISI, and to the Hampshire County Council in February 2012, and A207 left the school a month later. The following year, she was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder caused by the abuse inflicted on her when she was there. RSA 189 started as a boarder at Stanbridge Earls in September 2004 when he was 12 years old. He was bullied by his first roommate very soon after his arrival, and within weeks he was being subjected to child-on-child sexual abuse. It began when A189 attended the school chapel. Another pupil, Gareth Stevenson, told A189 to close his eyes and to expect a sweet to be put into his mouth. Instead, the other pupil put his penis in his mouth and left it there until he ejaculated. A189 was left terrified that that would happen again, but he was brave enough to tell a staff member at Stanbridge Earls about it pretty soon afterwards. His account was brushed off, and he was told that the other pupil would never have behaved, as he alleged. The sexual assaults continued after that disclosure. If A189 tried to escape when he was being assaulted, his abuser would punch him repeatedly. He tried again to disclose to the school what was being done to him. He pleaded with a teacher to walk him from music lessons, after which his abuser tended to assault him more frequently. In fairness to the school, that did eventually occur, but not until 2 years after A189 first asked for it to happen. And his abuser still found ways to sexually assault him. He dragged A189 into woodlands on the school grounds to rape him. On one occasion, he forced A189 to eat what he said was a sweet, but was in fact Viagra, and then forced A189 to bugger him. By year 10, when A189 was 14, he was being sexually assaulted at Stanbridge Earls about 3 times a day. Incredibly, on one such occasion, a member of staff walked in and observed him being forced into performing oral sex on another pupil in the drama building. She simply turned round and walked out again, ignoring what she'd seen. A189 used the teacher's arrival as an opportunity to escape, chased after her, pleading with her to help. Even more shockingly, she refused point blank to take any action. By the beginning of year 11, which was in autumn 2006, at least 3 staff members knew for a fact what was being done to A189. They all failed to act. The Stanbridge Earls then head teacher told A189 that if he went to the police, he'd be expelled. The police did become involved and attended Stanbridge Earls to interview A189, but he was so scared of being expelled after what he'd been told, he refused to make any allegations. Now, A189 is described in his inquiry statement that he feels the police failed him. But the bigger failure, of course, was Stanbridge Earls. He was the victim of a cover-up by the school, pure and simple. Once the police investigation had concluded, he felt that everyone at Stanbridge Earls was against him. He was a pupil there when Ofsted conducted pupil welfare investigations. Staff members took A189 to the sick bay during those investigations and told him in terms that he'd lose privileges if he said anything to any Ofsted inspectors. Now, after Stanbridge Earls closed, as you know, Chair, in 2013, A189 brought a civil claim for compensation. The defence responded initially by stating that his claim would be defended because it was out of time. As is so often the case in these matters, no sympathy was offered, nor any suggestion of an apology. He was then told subsequently by the school's insurers that the claim would also be defended on the additional ground that he'd consented to the sexual abuse. This was despite the fact that they knew A189 had serious Asperger's syndrome and was partially sighted at the time. He was subsequently registered as blind in 2011 before he brought his claim. They only accepted responsibility after A189 had given evidence to a jury in the criminal trial and his abuser was convicted of 11 counts of indecency. Even then, he received no apology from the school. Now, Chair, there are two particularly striking factors to the accounts given by A207 and A189 in their statements. Firstly, both of their accounts of sexual abuse at Stanbridge Earls are very recent. A189 described events that lasted until mid-2008, and A207 described being abused at Stanbridge Earls until 2013, just 6 years ago. Second, both A207 and A189 were brave enough to disclose that they were being abused very soon after the abuse began. A189 told a member of staff at Stanbridge Earls soon after he was first assaulted in a school chapel, as I've described. A207's mother contacted Stanbridge Earls to inform staff that her daughter was being abused shortly after she started there as a boarder. But the serious sexual abuse that they both suffered at Stanbridge Earls then went on for years after staff at the school had first been told about it in both occasions. If there'd been a law in force that compelled staff in schools to report complaints of sexual abuse from pupils, it's far more likely that A207 and A189 would have escaped those subsequent years of abuse that followed their early disclosures. And in A189's case in particular, he would have avoided the sexual assaults inflicted on him, progressing from that first instance of forced oral sex to ultimately him being repeatedly raped by his abuser for years thereafter. Chair, I've addressed you on mandatory reporting many times before, and I appreciate that the inquiry has, of course, recently published the result of your second conference on mandatory reporting. It was held over those 2 days in April 2019, in which the pros and cons, I see, were considered with the benefit of some international perspectives, which can only be useful. And indeed, we note the support that was provided earlier on today for mandatory reporting by the NSPCC's Miss Lara. Well, we submit that the two relatively current accounts of the Verrazona Law survivors that I've just described to you demonstrate that closed environment institutions, like boarding schools such as Stanbridge Earls, where contact between vulnerable children and adults outside the institution are inevitably that bit more limited, are in particularly urgent need of some form of legal obligation to report child sexual abuse. And we invite the panel to consider how different the lives of these two survivors might have been if those staff members to whom their initial disclosures were made had been compelled by law to report them to the appropriate agencies at the time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. O'Donnell.